Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. First of all, let me explain why we have not posted a new episode in the last few weeks. In case you have been unaware of the situation that is currently ongoing in the state of Louisiana, this podcast emanates from Baton Rouge, and we have been inundated with some flooding and natural disaster situations the last couple of weeks, and so I've been temporarily displaced from my home, so I was unable to have a place to get together with Chad and to do this podcast. So if you were wondering, that's why we've been on a little hiatus in the post-Suicide Squad era of movie news. But now that we are back and we are on air again, the summer movie season has officially come to a close.
Thank God.
And the award season begins in earnest in September with the TIFF, the Toronto International Film Festival. And, you know, as of right now, when we'll get into this further down the road as we do our Oscar preview specials and such, as of right now, Birth of a Nation looks to be the lead dog in the clubhouse going into the fall movie season, although, to be fair, a lot of the anticipated stuff won't debut until TIFF. And Star You Ride and some of the others, but because it was because Birth of a Nation was at Sundance and it was the Sundance darling this year, it's the film that is kind of popping and has everybody talking about it the way that people were talking about Whiplash coming out of Sundance a couple of years ago. As we get more into the fall, we'll be talking more about those prospects as, of course, our genre movie news starts to kind of wind down in terms of actual releases. No more comic book movies until Doctor Strange in November. The calendar's pretty much full up with just kind of awardsy type things in September and October. So, really until Thanksgiving season, from there on, we're probably going to be talking about more our area of expertise, but for the next 2 months, it'll probably be more awards focused and possibly some news focused, because of course we've got Rogue One and Doctor Strange coming out. But since before we move on to the fall calendar, turn the page to September, we wanted to focus on the summer. Chad, let's start off by talking about what was our favorite movie, least favorite movie, and movie that you hope no one ever has to see.
You know, any other summer, there's probably, like, a list of movies. I'm like, oh, these are good. No, not so much. I didn't see as many as you, though the movie that nobody should see is probably going to be the same. I'm never going to watch that, but you have to suffer for our sins and watch Independence Day. I've heard nothing but terrible things about it.
$102 million domestic. $102 million domestic.
What was the budget?
180.
Oh, I thought it would have been higher than that.
180 to 200 million. Yeah.
That's quite a bath they just took.
That's almost as bad as what Paramount just took on TMNT Out of the Shadows, which only did 85 million domestic.
How much did they bump up their budget? Like,
it was, I think it was like 120, 180, something like that.
In the end, I think TMNT is going to make more money just because it's turtles and merchandise and all that stuff. Independence Day is just like...
We will not hear about Independence Day resurgence again until the Razzies roll around in February.
Oh, they're going to be up for everything.
Uh-huh. They are going to be like Fantastic Four, Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. it's going to be yet another thing that you write the book on.
Which one's worse, Fantastic Four or Independence Day?
Ooh. I'd have to say Independence Day just solely because I had not yet seen a good Fantastic Four movie in my lifetime. So I saw a good Independence Day movie and I heard this Independence Day movie talked about for 20 years. So yeah.
Wow. just kind of sad.
That it, for an entire generation. And somehow Will Smith made the brilliant career move not to opt in and instead decide to do Suicide Squad.
Yeah, which, I mean, critically.
Critically is if they're what is what and what, but like financially.
Yeah, Suicide Squad has crushed a lot more than it should have, considering what the critics thought. But okay, so are we going to count summer from May?
I'm counting from the first week of May to the last week of August.
Okay, so the best movie is Civil War, hands down. Nothing else even comes close.
Why was anybody surprised that Captain America lays down his shield at the end and is not Captain America anymore? I thought that was the implication in the comics, and I thought that was the implication in the movie.
Because it was. I mean, he lays down the shield
and walks away.
And it's not like we don't see him again in the movie. We see him again.
And he says, "Call me, maybe."
He leaves the phone and says that, and they show the very last shot is of him in like regular clothes breaking him out. Like, duh. Like this is such a non-story. It's just like we really have nothing else to talk about this week, don't we? No, we don't.
And that in the headlines of, you know, it will be a thing. Infinity War will be a conclusion and a beginning.
Again, I say, duh. Like, I mean, I don't expect them to like reboot it in the sense of restart everything again. But if some of the characters go off to the side and we don't see them for a while, and we focus on other characters that we're just starting franchises with.
The way that I line it out is that we have roster one and roster two now. The first generation and the second generation. And they're stacking that second generation now with Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, Spider-Man. You know, and that's a whole roster of Avengers right there that can take over from the Thor, Hulk, Tony, Iron Man, Cap, Black Widow, Hawkeye.
Like my only question Vision. Is, when you do that, do you just go ahead right then and recast that first set, or do they just hang around and you call them whenever you want? Because I think
unless some of them get killed.
Well, I know
story because I mean. All that's doing is taking the Tony Stark iteration of Iron Man off the table, or taking the Steve Rogers iteration of Captain America off the table.
Well, as much as people would like to, like it story wise for one of them to die, you're not killing Iron Man, and you're not killing Captain America. Those are your two.
Hemsworth might be able to go.
Maybe, but I mean, he ain't got nothing else to do. He does pretty well in the role and keep letting him be funny in it. Hey,
he was the funniest part about Ghostbusters.
He was. No. I thought it was Leslie Jones, and I'm solidifying it's Leslie Jones because Leslie Jones has been getting dumped on for like a month because she's in this movie. And she's by far not the worst thing in this movie.
No, as we covered on our podcast, there are other things that are
way worse. She is top two in this movie, like one, Hemsworth, her, whichever order you want to put it in, is those two. So why is she getting like they're being so bad to this poor woman? Like she's done nothing to you. She took a job.
Well, she took a job, but she's been replaced now in terms of internet rage by Zendaya. So
I would have said that, but then they hacked her website and put up like new pictures of her on her own website, which was after the Zendaya stuff. So, like. Leave her alone. You left and went back. Why? Leave the woman alone. She's done you nothing. She took a job. There was a black person in the first Ghostbusters. Why are you killing her and not him? You like him.
He can go to fan conventions and sign autographs and send his Ghostbusters costume and eat orange slices.
Yeah. Not orange slices. It's a whole orange. He peeled the orange and a certain orange. I will never ever forget that. And I want to meet him so I can tell him that story. But, so, Cap's my good movie. My movie nobody ever should see is Independence Day. A bad movie?
Or at least favorite movie of the summer.
I guess Ghostbusters. Like, of the ones I saw. I guess that's the worst one. Because I still haven't seen some of them. But, we've gone on about Ghostbusters. I don't care. I just don't care. It didn't offend me.
Okay, so they're going to take a $75 million bath on it. And yeah. Paul Feig and David Ayer are going to be in a bar somewhere having drinks and conversing about...
Now, who gets more drunk? Because while they've both been getting bashed, I mean, Ayer's making money. Like, this sucker looks like he's going
to... And is defending WB to the hilt and taking the company line every chance he gets.
Which... They owe him more of a solid because they passed on Bright. But this movie's probably going to make at least seven. And...
Now, it's officially now back behind Guardians in terms of overall pacing.
Yeah, so it's going to make seven when they might have wanted $850. I think that's stupid, but...
And no one's ever going to tell the truth on how much they pay.
Never. So when you announced Suicide Squad, and when I heard it, I would say, oh, that movie should make about five. It's going to make seven. You've made $200 more million than I thought you should have made. Congratulations. David Ayer, you've made them money, and you've taken all the bullets for them. They owe you a couple of good boys for all this. Paul Feig, on the other hand, I haven't heard that much dumping on him, but, I mean...
He took abuse for 2 years, nonstop, every day, from fanboys on Twitter.
He did, and he shouldn't have. He did poke the fire, though. He kept poking the fire sometimes. It's like, and I don't necessarily fault him, but considering he poked it so much, you think they'd be dumping on him? Like, I told you it was going to suck, even when you said it was good, and it still sucked. Instead of Leslie Jones, who just took a job.
Well, I mean, like, it's middle of the pack Feig for me. Like I said on the podcast that we did, like, there are certain episodes of The Office that I think are funnier than what he did there. But he had to fight the good fight for that 2 year period. He wasn't helped at all by his marketing department.
Not at all.
And his studio never backed him up.
Which is...
So, I mean...
It's Sony, though. They're just...
Move that movie to October and it probably does better.
You're right.
I mean, it's always going to have an uphill climb. And it was interesting to see that they're taking a different tact with Bad Boys. It's Bad Boys 3. They're taking a different tact with Jumanji, which is no longer my albatross because it is officially a sequel, not a reboot. Still have questions about why Kevin Hart would be in the movie, but... it's I feel bad for him because he's a brilliant director, and if John Watts doesn't get the opportunity to come back for whatever reason to Homecoming to Spider-Man, I'd love to see what Apatow or Feig could do with Spider-Man. I mean, there are other properties out there that he could attach himself to and go and do, other comedies that he can go and do that'll be really well done, because unlike Apatow has a flair for the dramatic, and he likes to kind of dwell in that dramedy territory, whereas Feig has just always been straight comedy. And I feel bad for him because he did have to, all these young ladies and him have had to fight this uphill battle.
Yeah. That Spider-Man idea, when you first said it, I'm like, it's never gonna happen, and it will never happen. But if, and only if, they were bringing in Black Cat, I'd be like, yes, he can do it. But that's the only way.
Well, then, that's going off of his distinction of the fact that he works well with female.
Yeah.
But that's like Whedon. I mean, Whedon came out a while back and said, hey, I'd be willing to come back for a Black Widow movie.
Yeah. And you say those two names, but, well, the vision I have of Black Cat in my head, I would go with Paul Feig over Joss Whedon. But I would also make Black Cat older than Peter, and my whole thing with Black Cat, and this is back when Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, this is weird, I know it's weird.
Felicia Hardy.
Before they cast her as Felicity Jones and Andrew Garfield one, this is weird, I know it's weird, but just gotta go with it. So I wanted her to be Beyonce. One, I like the internet being set on fire by, racial swapping people. That's just great. But then it's Beyonce, so it's like, how much are they going to really say? And just the thought of, I always played it like she was older than him, and how that dynamic
works. A Mrs. Robinson type deal.
Yeah, so how that kind of works. And I would really like it with this Spider-Man, but she's so much older than him. Like, he looks 12, and she is legitimately 35. That's a little bit too weird. So, if you want to drop it down some, but that same kind of dynamic, and Paul Feig working it, I'd be good with it.
All right. Well, so that is, so you're good as Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
You're okay to bad.
Or Ghostbusters, yeah.
Would be Ghostbusters, and you're, no one should ever have to see that movie ever again. Would be Independence Day Resurgence.
Which we should hear by Kristen, the Transformers summer movie. That should be what this is.
Yeah, destruction porn at its finest. So
we got another one of those things.
Yes, you do. No, just one. Three more. Three more, including a Bumblebee spin-off movie.
I'm not going to see it. I'm not.
Yes, someone's going to pay you, and you're going to go to see
it. If somebody's paying me, I'll go see it. But God, don't do that. Look. Don't just like. I know nobody.
I keep trying to get you in trouble with Tyrese. Tyrese just won't pay attention.
Yes, you do keep trying. And don't do that, because if he ever does pay attention, I got a whole lot of other things I don't like about Tyrese. This should not go well for me. So, no. Look. Don't anybody like volunteer to pay for me to go see this movie, because I don't want to go see it. So just don't do it. Just,
you'll no. fall asleep and. Okay.
I've fell asleep in the last two.
Yeah. So, my good of summer 2016 is going to be the Nice Guys, which was a really well done Shane Black noir 1970s thriller, which literally starts with a car crashing into a house and a young 13-year-old boy finding a porn star half naked in the car. And there are problems that I have with the movie. It does feel way too long in certain places. There are certain spots, to use a wrestling term, that are in there that just feel a beat or two too long. But it's a very funny movie. It's a very good action movie. The little girl that's in it, who's in Spider-Man Homecoming,
that's right, yeah.
She's brilliant at it in it, and if you can do Shane Black dialogue, you can do anything John Watts or anybody else is going to throw at you. John Francis Daly is going to throw at you. So, Nice Guys, I highly recommend Nice Guys to anybody. It's out on DVD now. My not so good or bad Warcraft, if there was not a thing called Independence Day Resurgence, we'd probably be getting all of this negative attention. As it is, it will stand as a very interesting feature for studios to ponder on, because it did make a whole lot of money in China, but didn't make money anywhere else. And doesn't really have a lot of Warcraft fans that are on board. So that's going to be interesting. And then my not so good, no one should ever have to sit through Independence Day Resurgence more than once. I feel bad for both Bill Pullman and any other actor who signed their names to that contract, because that's just,
I mean, do I feel bad for him?
Well, five writers, man. Like, they just, like, it's not like they could just let Emmerich and Dean do their thing, and, like, whatever y'all come up with, y'all worked magic back in 96, do it. No, it's like, we're going to bring these three other people along the line to do enough passes. And the crazy thing about it is, like, the way the rules are set up with the WGA, they have to validate and prove that those guys had enough of their visions in the movie to qualify for a credit. So, clearly they did enough work on the script to have a screenplay by credit, not just a story by credit. So, like, it feels like that movie is everything Emmerich talked about for 20 years. It's all the plot. That's all there. But, like, it's muddled, and it's darker for that first hour than it needs to be, and it finds itself again in this third act, which is just balls to the wall crazy 90s action movie. But before that, it's trying to be some super serious sci-fi movie, and it's uneven. It feels like a studio who got scared.
That seems to be a theme.
Yeah, I mean, there was potential there. I mean, I think all the reviewers got it right. You know, we waited 20 years and this is what we get. Like, he had been on the press tour for every movie that's come out since Day After Tomorrow. Every press tour. I've Got an Idea for an Independence Day sequel. ID Forever, parts 1 and 2. And then this is what we get. I mean, it just, you know, it's disappointing to say the least.
I didn't know about the Five Riders, so I'm really curious if it was like the studio's decision.
There are 4 story by credits.
This is where, I mean, over the summer we've heard a lot, particularly from WB, about them coming in and wanting changes and things, and maybe Independence Day is the same thing. But
The biggest change has just been made, so
that is not official yet.
That'll be official by Monday morning.
I mean, they didn't have to announce this. We already knew this.
Well, not only did they not have to announce this, that they should wait. I would have released this news after Justice League comes out. Let Zack play around for another year and a half, and then make the announcement.
Let's think about who we're talking about. Well, first, so y'all are clued in if y'all hadn't picked it up. Like, right when we sat down to do this, I ran across an article that said Zack Snyder will not be doing Justice League 2 and Man of Steel 2, which, if you listen to us, you would assume that we both be like, well, duh, that's just what we already know. But it looks like they're going to make it official. But I agree with you, it should be after Justice League. But who are we talking about?
Well, like, we just got finished, we've talked about this on the podcast before. Like, it's, why do I want to see a movie by Dead Man Walking? And that's literally what he has felt like.
Since
Batman vs. Superman came out, he has felt like Dead Man Walking. And the fact that you didn't come out in, it was almost the Les Miles situation. You just left him twisting out here in the wind and, like, didn't say anything to confirm or deny. Well, and then you do that rush set visit where you fly everybody out, like, a week, you know, like, 2 weeks into filming. And with, like, 3 days heads up, it's like, these people get this email, like, Zack Snyder heard your comments about Dawn of Justice and wants to fly you to the set of Justice League, and you can file your reports 3 days later.
So, a couple of things about what you just said right there. One, WB put themselves in the corner by completely banking everything on Batman vs. Superman, and at least waiting to see what the reception was to start Justice League, because they were supposed to start the Monday after Batman vs. Superman came out. However, to also go over what you just said, they flew them out 2 weeks into filming, which was 2 months after Batman vs. Superman came out. And we had this running joke for a while. It's like, till I see a picture, it ain't happening. And this goes right along with that. It's like, Batman vs. Superman came out, and they panned it, the critics panned it, and W was like, whoa. Slow down.
I mean, but Zach was still posting pictures of him and Momoa in the costume room.
Which works, because it's all pre-production stuff. But they didn't start shooting that sucker until probably
mid-April?
No. It would have been, if they did it when, around 2 weeks before the set visit, then that would have been like the end of May for them to start. So it really is like 2 months pushed back. So, now we got to get into the questions of how much did they change and what did they change and all this other stuff. But changes were made. We don't know what they are. We've seen the Justice League trailer, which is a stark contrast to Batman vs. Superman.
And we've read Deborah Snyder's words and we've read Zack's words.
Yeah, and I'll give Zack credit, because clearly, once this becomes official, then he really has just been like, yeah, your name's on this, but this isn't what you want to do. He's marched along and done his job, no matter what they said.
Do you think Nolan feels regretful about that recommendation?
Oh, Zach? It depends. I don't think so. Because I think Nolan would have appreciated. I think Nolan does appreciate Batman. I mean, not Batman for Superman, but Man of Steel.
But that's him and Goyer babysitting Zach.
And it's kind of what Zach needs. Like, Zach is a great visual storyteller. Like, he gets great shots, but he has problems telling a story. And I don't have a problem with Man of Steel because I can follow the story and it makes sense. And I can...
Except for Pa Kent telling him that a school bus full of children should die.
See, and here's where the weakness of Zach comes through. Because I watched this movie, like, literally...
9 times in the theater.
Like, no, literally 100 times. Like, I watched it 2 days ago. Like, the whole thing. I watched it again. It was on TV. I just watched it. That scene, I know what they're going for. What Pa Kent is trying to get across is, you have this secret.
Once you let the secret out of the bag.
That's kind of it. But we want you to be old enough and responsible enough to let the secret out when you want, in the way that you want. And when he says, "Should I let the kids die?" When he says maybe, he's saying maybe, but he's saying maybe as in the instance like, it's a hard choice. We know what you want to do, but if you're gonna do it, don't do it like you did. But because Zach, nobody gets that part. They just get like, okay, tell him just kill a bunch of people. But no, that's not what he meant. Because you're watching the movie, like Paul Kent. During the hurricane, the tornado scene, another scene everybody hates, before he just lets himself die, he's like actually sitting there helping people, getting people to go and do stuff, in part, so Clark doesn't have to do anything. So he in himself is a hero, so you would know that he would impart that on his son. So he wouldn't have a problem with Clark being a hero. It's just like, don't get caught doing it because we don't want you to spill the beans early. That's the whole gist of why everybody hates that movie. It's there, but the way Zach does it, nobody gets it. I just happen to watch this thing a whole lot, so of course I get it, but nobody else does. So, and I can't fault him for that. That's just how Zach does stuff. But all of the visual stuff, it's great. It's just the storytelling stuff.
So, where were
we? I don't know how we got there, but yeah. Oh, because I forget. We were talking about the article, yeah.
Well, I mean... You know, I think that my good is the good get the nice guys. My not so good is Warcraft, and my no one should ever have to watch it again is Independence Day Resurgence. I'm going to be interested to see as we go down the line here. Now the impetus is put on. You know, with Suicide Squad being a divisive movie, I don't care what anybody says, it's a divisive movie.
Oh, it is, yeah.
Even within the fan base. And it seems to me, the thing that surprised me the most is that there's an age line right there. Like, if you're 25 and under, you think this movie is the greatest thing that's ever happened. And if you're 25 or over, you're more hesitant and you're more reserved about it. Maybe that's because we all lived through Batman and Robin, I don't know. But, you know... Now the focus shifts to Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And we make the joke all the time about screenplay by Zack Snyder and Geoff Johns. So, you know, that kind of tempers the enthusiasm. And the thing about both Marvel and DC is we got some... By the way, another shout-out to Geek.com for getting the crazy Hobo Odin story right. But the thing that both Marvel and DC are benefiting from is the fact that we now know the slates. So, like, when Suicide Squad is divisive, well, we still have Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman can save it. Wonder Woman can fix things. Or, you know, Age of Ultron is supposed to be the sequel to one of the the third highest grossing movie of all time. It's supposed to be this big, wonderful, huge event. And no one was talking about it because four months earlier, Feige had revealed the timeline.
Yeah.
And everybody was talking about Civil War. And now that Civil War is come and gone, everybody's talking about Ego the Living Planet and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Hobo Odin and you know, Thor having Rest in Peace written on his arm and having an address for Beaker Street and everything else. You're talking about Thor Ragnarok. So, you know, meanwhile, you have a movie coming out in November that's pretty important in Doctor Strange, which is all set to, like, bring mysticism and the weird and wackiness to your cinematic universe. So, I mean, both DC and Marvel benefit from the fact that you can perpetuate this always forward, onto the next thing mentality because we know what's coming next. It's not like 2008, 2010, when we didn't know beyond a Thor movie and a Cap movie if they were even going to do an Avengers movie.
Yeah. Like with Marvel, you know, they're so well established that we can get hype for these other movies, but still come back down for the next one. DC, on the other hand, it's benefiting them just for the fact that
it's another goalpost.
Yeah.
Keeps moving the goalpost.
The thing with this particular goalpost is DC is now clearly visibly pointing at it. I mean, like, this is where, like, if you're at a map, this is where you put a pin. It's like, Geoff Johns entered here. That's what they're doing for Wonder Woman. And that is what, I think that is what it has kept the excitement at least a consistent pace. If not, I don't think it increased it because of Suicide Squad. But, DC's just they're in a weird place. It's their own fault. But the thing that probably does temper the excitement more than anything else is the story by Zack Snyder Park.
Screenplay by. Until they go to the Writers Guild of America and they look through that script after everything is done and they just drop him from the log line and just put Geoff Johns.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping it's story by whoever and Zack Snyder and screenplay by Geoff Johns, because I think Snyder has these big ideas. He just doesn't know how to get them across. So
does an excellent job of getting them across in Watchmen, though.
I need to watch that one again. Because I've heard, I just watched the Screen Junkies, the honest trailer for Watchmen, and I think they collectively hate Watchmen. I've only seen it once. It was just like the comic to me. I don't really like the comic, so I was like, oh, this is fine. But I'm going to have to watch it again and try to watch it from a person that reveres Watchmen's perspective. Because a lot of them hate that movie, and I just don't understand why. But again, I don't like the comic, so I can watch it and, like, accept it. But it just, even when they were doing that, they were like, Zack misses the small points of what the comic was going for, and he just went for, like, the big action sex stuff in Watchmen.
Which is surprising to me, because I find Snyder's take on Watchmen to be a very nuanced commentary on superheroes and deconstruction of superheroes, which it seems to me to be the thing that Snyder feels the most passion for and identifies with the most. I don't think he identifies with these characters as their red, white, and blue counterparts. I think he doesn't view them through the lens of the golden age of the 50s and the 60s. He views them more from that lens of the 80s and more of that questioning, more of that deconstructionist mindset of an Alan Moore, you know, or of a
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller. More of that kind of a lens. And so I think that Watchmen is more suited to him advancing those ideas, whereas a Superman movie isn't.
Yeah. Well, like a lot of people say, you know, Snyder's not a big comic guy. No, he really is.
No, he's as much as Favreau. He's a huge comic book guy. But
he came in with, that's his entry point in the comic, was Watchmen, Dark Knight, all that kind of stuff. So that's what he's really big into.
Whereas someone like Burton grew up with, you know, the early versions of the Batman and the early Batman stories.
Well, Burton, yeah, he did, but Burton is different because even when he got it, he was like, Batman's psychotic, and I want to make him psychotic. We're going to mess around with this weird psychotic stuff, which is not so bad in the first one. The second one is when it's like Burton being...
Well, yeah, but the Batman Returns is way too long and goes off on its own tangents in three different ways.
It does.
Because all three of them have their own story, and while their stories overlap, none of them are fleshed out enough, you know, to truly, you know, you never really are able to fully sympathize with Penguin, you know.
Yeah, it was a quick turn.
Right. And Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman the same way. Like, the movie's so long, she stays in her Selina Kyle persona for a large portion of the movie, and it's not really till the late second and third acts that she is the Catwoman that we all know. Yeah. And Batman is just...
He's kind of there.
He's kind of there, but he's a completely different, to me, a completely different Bruce Wayne and Batman from what he was at the end of Batman 89. And to some extent, that can be a good thing because, of course, your encounter with Joker would make you that way. It would cause you to have some issues, but, you know, it's just... off on a tangent on Batman 89 and Batman Returns, but, like, that's what Snyder knows.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's... And I, like I said, I think he just favors psychological deconstruction of superheroism more than he does the traditional views of these heroes.
He does. And I think if he can salvage Justice League and we get to a point where they get creators that are on board with the vision that you want to have for the characters. And that was always DC's big thing, because they want to be the auteur, the favorable studio. They were like, Zach, do what you want, but we want to build this universe, but do what you want. No, you can't do that. No, you let him do what you want within the confines of what you're trying to accomplish.
They didn't learn from the Marvel playbook the right way. Like, Marvel had issues with Iron Man 2. They'd, you know, I don't even count. People talk about The Incredible Hulk and the problems that Norton had with Marvel on that movie. And, you know, when I write the book on the Marvel Cinematic Universe and we get question time with Mr. Feige, we'll find out more about that. But, like, Iron Man 2 is really, to me, the prime example, because they didn't really understand that they were making a cohesive cinematic universe when they were filming that Hulk movie. They knew it when they were doing Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that movie gets sacrificed, according to Mickey Rourke, according to Favreau himself, according to everyone, that, you know, he gets, you know, that movie gets sacrificed for the greater good of First Avenger, Thor, and the Avengers movie.
But, and, I mean, it's, I mean, yeah, Incredible Hulk happened, but for all intents and purposes, this is the second movie. This is when it is clear they can do an Avengers movie. This was the first movie for it.
It was a sequel to Iron Man. Yeah. A sequel to a billion-dollar movie.
And they learned their lessons about universe building in that movie. They made their mistakes on that movie, and they were like, oh, we can't do this. And we can proceed.
Because First Avenger and Thor are solo movies. True mm-hmm. solo movies. They have small ties. The Infinity Gauntlet, blink and you miss it. You know, they have the... Obviously, Howard Stark is a big tie-in in First Avenger. But, and of course, that movie ends in the past and is a direct setup for where we find Steve Rogers in Avengers.
Yeah.
But, like, they do the character building in those movies themselves. And then, of course, they basically gave Whedon the structure. They said, look, we want to use Loki as the villain. We want to have a Chitauri army, and, you know, we want you to bring the team together, break the team apart, and bring them back together at the end. And Whedon was like, cool, you just gave me my first, second, and third acts. I can work around that. You know, but they learned their lesson not to do what they did in Iron Man 2, which was just stuff it so full of Easter eggs. They sort of made that same mistake in Age of Ultron, but the thing about it was Ultron is a salvageable movie because Whedon does still have adequate ability to tell a story and to get themes across, and he does still talk a lot about the relationship between fathers and sons. He still does manage to get a lot across about the dichotomy between Rogers and Stark and the differences that those two have. He still is able to make a commentary on imperialism and our ability to go and use drones in places and the effects that that can have on civilian populations. He can make all of these story points in an Avengers movie that still is overcrowded, overstuffed, and, you know, building toward a greater cinematic universe. Mm-hmm. To me, Age of Ultron is not nearly as bad as Iron Man 2.
No. No, I don't... No,
and going forward, I don't think you're going to have that issue anymore, because now that we're in Phase 3, we're into what I call the multi-layering phase of Marvel, where we're going to truly have the comic book version of this world, where Hulk is in Thor movie, and Thor's walking around New York City with the address for Doctor Strange. Falcon shows up in Ant-Man. You know, Captain Marvel shows up in Avengers Infinity War. You know, Winter Soldier shows up in Black Panther. I mean, we're going to start having these crisscrossing dissectional moments so that when you get to the Infinity War, everybody has a connection to everybody else that makes it feel kind of organic, that they're all coming together for this one moment. Now, that being said, Marvel's other problem right now is villains. And while I loved what they did with Zemo, I thought it was incredibly brilliant and incredibly well played, there aren't a lot of strong villains in Marvel. And in order for Thanos to be the intimidating force that you need him to be, you need to have him be a strongly written, well-rounded villain. I think Cate Blanchett's Helena is going to be in that same vein, where I think she'll be a really good villain. But, you know, Malekith, Ronan, Whiplash, Ironmonger, the Abomination, Loki and the Kree Army, or the, not Kree Army, it was Chitauri Army, you know, Alden Killerich. I don't know, people may be confusing the two after the young Han Solo movie comes out. The Mandarin issue there. You know, like I said, Malekith, the Winter Soldier actually has a good villain. And Rowan. And then Ultron has some degree of character development, but not as much as what could have been.
Yeah, they kind of rushed him.
Right.
I mean, as it stands, I would say Loki and... Definitely Loki. And I like... I'm partial to Red Skull. I think he's one of the better
ones. He will never be seen again. He was zapped away to Asgard or the Nine Realms or somewhere. Because Hugo Weaving decided that this was not for him.
That's fine, but I want the Red Skull to come back. I wish he'd come back too, because I really love him as a Red Skull. But those are like the two. But just by the virtue of Thanos
having to collect the stones and where some of those stones are located.
That and before that, it's just that we've actually seen him in other movies. Like, so while most people they don't know a lot about him, they've seen him. They know he's coming. And that gives him leg up.
But that leads to the joke that Waititi made with the drawing, the 5-year-old drawing of Thanos that he posted to his Instagram. It's like a list of things that we know. He doesn't like to stand up.
But until you see that, it's like, well, you really don't know that much. But, I mean, compared to the rest of these villains, that's more than we got for the rest of them. We've seen him in 3 movies, probably a total of 2 minutes. But it's still more than we've gotten so far. And by the virtue of the end of Ultron, it's like, fine, I'm going to do it myself. That means he's getting off their chair to start getting some of these stones. So he's going to get some of them between now.
But how, Chad? Because there's no Infinity Stones in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
But there are other movies. I don't think he'll show up in Doctor Strange.
No, but Strange does have one.
I still don't know how I like that, because he's got to lose it. And if Thanos isn't killing Strange, which he's not going to do, but he's going to kill the Vision. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Vision is losing his head. That's just how that goes. So he's going to take Strange's stone, but not kill him. But he's going to kill Vision. There's something a little bit wrong with that.
Well, not really, because his is around his neck and Vision's is actually
implanted. Yeah, but once you take it off, shouldn't he just be like human, and shouldn't Thanos just be like, I'm going to take your chest while I take it with me? But outside of that, the biggest thing with Thanos is that we're going to see him probably in Thor, and I don't know where else between now and Thor to get some of those stones. And when he finally shows up and he takes Vision's head off, which will probably be early in the movie, everybody in the theater will be like, I know people like us are like, Vision's losing his head. But the general population, I don't think they quite get this shit. So the minute he takes off his head, the whole audience is going to be like, oh, no! And they're all going to lose their stuff. And right then and there, Thanos can do nothing else for the rest of the movie, and he's the best villain they've had.
He is the Ben Solo of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, one move. I'm doing it myself. And there goes Vision's head, and they're like, the people in the audience can be like, he killed Vision. The Avengers on the screen be like, that's a big gun, and he just took his head off.
That dude lifted Thor's hammer.
Yeah, and he ain't got no head. We're screwed.
Let's start making phone calls.
So I'm not really worried about Thanos. It's like, it really kind of writes itself for him to be the big end-all, be-all. Now, how do you finish it? How do you defeat him in the second movie? I got nothing. But getting to the first, once you get him in the first movie, he should be ultimate badass.
Indeed. So now we've discussed the MCU, the MCEU, and the DCEU, yeah, and the MCU. Let's move on to the Star Wars universe. Rogue One had a trailer that came out during the Rio Olympics, met with reasonable acclaim. Didn't look like anything too out there or different from what we'd already seen. Your thoughts on the Rogue One trailer and the news that John Williams is going to score
I'm not surprised, and I'm happy that John Williams is scoring episode 8. It does begging the question, like, are y'all going to get somebody else up to bat? Because I love John Williams. But he's not Ra's al Ghul, and he's not jumping in the Lazarus pit and going to live forever. You might want to put somebody on
deck. But as we said on this podcast before, there is someone older than him who's still working, so.
This is true. When watching the Oscars and seeing John Williams next to that dude, like, really? There's somebody that's old? John Williams looks like a spry young man compared to this guy. Somebody to help him up to get his Oscar.
Williams did.
I thought it was. I couldn't remember. I know he was sitting right next to him. I thought he helped him up. I don't know if he helped him all the way down the aisle, but yeah. But that's good. It's, you know, it brings that continuity, one of the things that goes all the way through. The Rogue One trailer, I've watched it probably once or twice. And since that's been weeks ago, there's nothing that really stood out. It did get me excited when I saw it. So that's good. It does look like a war film, which we're still in limbo about how much of that really is going to happen. It seems like this is like, maybe a little bit too Apocalypse Now, bring it on back some. But the big thing is Vader. And I was always of the mind that they were either going to like show him at the very end, or they were going to show him somewhere in the middle and he was be cutting people down. And as I thought about it, I kind of was like, I want him to be cutting people down. Just so there's no question that this is not episode 8, because Vader's there and he's mowing people down. But they get it at the end. So that's fine. I know there's some excitement. My only concern is that I still think people are going to think this is episode 8, even though Darth Vader's there and they're like...
Well, that will all clear itself up around Thanksgiving when we get the first teaser for episode 8 and when the announcement of the trailer is the announcement of the title is made.
Is that when we're getting that in November?
It would make sense. It's about the time they did the first the Thanksgiving 2013 was the first trailer for Rogue One. Mm. Thanksgiving 2014, I should say.
I mean, yeah, I will.
And as soon as you put out there is an episode 8, it is subtitled this, that will take some of the things away. I think Disney's missing the boat. They did a very poor job on the marketing campaign for Beat Dragon, which I've heard is a fantastic movie, but just under-marketed. And I feel like they're kind of botching this, too, because to me, the easiest remedy is to just plaster Vader all over that and say, hey, look, Vader, maybe Tarkin, if the Cushing estate allowed it, but, like, Vader. Vader.
I don't think the general population knows who Tarkin is. I mean, I've really been into Star Wars since, like, high school. And I didn't really, really, really know who he was until, like, a few years ago.
Until the book?
Probably around then. Like, I knew who he was. I always knew he was there in the movie. And because in the movie, he's kind of like, Vader messes with everybody but him. And he's the one that's like, I'm not scared of you. So I always knew who he was. I just never thought
much about him. The one that Leia refers to as holding Vader's leash.
Yes. And when like when I thought of him, every time I think of him, I think of Leash, and I couldn't remember why. And that's why, yeah. But a general population just like, he ain't Darth Vader. He's some old dude. So yeah, Vader is their key. Like Vader, Death Star, Vader, Death Star. Keep putting those there, and eventually, I think people will be like, but Vader's dead, and they blew up 3 Death Stars. But Vader's dead. They threw up 3 Death Stars. But Vader's dead. Wait. Oh, okay. We're back here. All right.
Which is my defense for why you need a crawl.
Yeah, and that is the best defense I've heard. So give him the crawl. I'm not against it. I thought it would just been something different. But, yeah, people just need to know.
Now, none of us are surprised at the meaning of the term Rogue One. You know, with it being Jyn Erso being a rogue, a group of, you know, a call sign, and then, of course, the movie being the first non-episode.
I mean, it's cool in the fact that they thought it out that far, or at least they're telling us they thought it out that far. Be nice if they did. I don't know. I don't really trust
them. That was one of the first things that people recognized when they announced the title was the fact that it's a call sign.
Well, yeah, and that one, that's like the easy one. The whole about Jyn being a rogue and this being the first one that's not.
And Jimmy Smits is in the movie, so the prequels are in fact canon.
Yeah, I've heard. Well, as much as people will like them not to be.
Hey, maybe we'll actually get to see some of Alderaan.
Maybe. Do we want to see Alderaan or do we want to see.
It's a very beautiful planet. It's probably more beautiful than the Naboo.
See. And this is part of the thing with Star Wars. Like, a lot of people's love for Star Wars is them filling in the gaps from things that they know. So maybe Alderaan should be one of those things that just stays filled in the gaps.
Well, Alderaan is in episode 3 for all 30 seconds.
I don't even remember. Well, again, it's episode 3.
When they were bringing Leia home to the Organas.
Oh, I vaguely remember.
It doesn't look all that different from the Naboo.
I was gonna say, episode 3 is the one that offends me the least. However, her going to Alderaan would have been following what offends me the most in that movie, which is the whole.
You're panicking, you're breaking my heart.
Yes, that whole thing. His dad and him just killing the kids. Those are the two things that I just can't let go of this movie.
A young pupil of mine named Darth Vader. A young pupil of mine named Darth Vader, who was a young pupil of mine named Darth Vader, turned and murdered your father. And betrayed the Jedi Knights.
Yeah. And somewhere in there, he didn't say it, but somewhere in there it was like, he killed all the Jedi. Which is what I expected.
Down. I think he said Vader hunted down and killed all the Jedi.
Which is what I expected. I expected him to go off in his little funny looking TIE fighter and hunt him down. Instead of him walking into the temple and killing a bunch of 9-year-olds. And then having a difficult time with like a 12-year-old. Fate was it just takes it just changes him from being this ruthless, cold-hearted killer to a whiny little punk that kills kids. Mm-hmm. But I'm whatever. I'm not going off on this rant.
No. So, what is your thought on coming back full circle as we close out this episode? Your thoughts on where we stand as a culture as far as summer movie season goes? I mean, we did have huge hits like Finding Dory and Secret Life of Pets.
I forgot all about those.
I mean, we did have really big hits, but a lot of misses. Is the summer just too crowded?
I mean, it is. But then again, like, most of those big hits all came out when they had time to breathe, which implies that there was time to breathe. Because I'm thinking back on it, I don't really remember much in June except for Finding Dory. July was like Ghostbusters and Secret Life of Pets. Now, granted, there are the bombs that are in there because Independence Day came out in June.
Independence Day, Legend of Tarzan, X-Men Apocalypse.
If the studio is
expecting... Nine Lives.
If the studio is expecting all of these movies to make, like, 300 million plus, then yeah, it's too crowded, because you're not getting that from every last one of these movies. But just the way that I'm thinking about it, it seems like they're spaced out, like, really, really big movie, kind of big movie, but a little bit smaller, that's not going to infringe on big movie, but can take some money off of that. So, June and July seem spaced out perfectly. May was not. Because we had Civil War, we had Alice, we had X-Men. I know I'm forgetting something that was in there. And when I say Captain America, that takes away three of your weeks in May. So you're left fighting for the other week and a half between X-Men and Alice. So I don't think it's... I think by the very nature, it's going to be somewhat crowded. But the studio has to do a better job of not stuffing all of these big, gigantic, need-to-make-a-billion-dollar movies into the same space. But, like, here's a billion-dollar movie. Here's a movie you need to make, like, three. Here's another billion-dollar movie. Here's another movie.
And that gets to the point. That gets to the point and the problem of the fact there's no more mid-budget movies.
Yeah.
Nice Guys get swallowed up.
Nice Guys
get swallowed up by the fact that there is Captain America Civil War and there's X-Men Apocalypse and there's...
See, I don't think Nice Guys should have been released in May. One, I don't... While the marketing that I saw, I liked, I don't think it's going to grab anybody that's not, like, actually looking at movies. Because I didn't see Nice Guys, but I wanted to. And I'm probably going to watch it tonight, actually. But people that are just casually going to movies, they have no idea what it is because they didn't see any of that stuff. So I don't think marketing for Nice Guys was great. But by the nature, I have seen other Shane Black movies, like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. There's no way I'm sticking anything like that in May. You stick Iron Man there because it has Iron Man on it, even though it's a Shane Black movie disguised as Iron Man movie. You don't stick Kiss Kiss Bang Bang in May, and you don't stick Nice Guys in May. Stick them in, like, September. Like, everything's running off, and then, like, now, I'm like, oh, I can go to the movies today. There's nothing I want to see. Oh, Nice Guys, I go watch that. That's how you do it. It ends off the summer before, like, people get involved in football and all that kind of stuff. But I think really what did this summer end, well, really, it's just, like, the quality of the movies. They just weren't good. But it was a bunch of sequels that nobody wanted.
Or asked for.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know you're going to make another X-Men, so I'm gonna take that away. But, like, Alice, nobody cared. Nobody wants to see that. I know we said summer, but I'm going to throw in, like, The Huntsman. Who? Nobody saw the first one. Why are you making another one? Ghostbusters. While people wanted a sequel, they didn't want it the way you did it. So if you're going to do it...
Crouch it the right way.
Like, either you do it the way people want, which they could have still did the gender swap thing and do what you've been saying, make it Ghostbusters 3. Or if you're going to do it your own way, completely knock out of the park and distance yourself from the other movie, which this movie was like, no, you know all these things from the first movie. And we're doing this kind of different, but taking off beats from the first movie. So you just pissed off all the people that you want to go watch the movie. And but then you have stuff like Dory, which works great. I think what other sequel came out was fine. But it was just the studios got wrapped up in the sequels, and because it's a branded IP, I get it, has half the battle, but not every branded IP is something you need to go off with. You've got to have a little
Ben-Hur.
Man, that, talk about a bath. Just like they put it in, they just turn the tub on, put somebody in, and it was like, here, face down. We're not going to let you get off the mat. Just down right there. I don't want to be one of those people that say we need more original movies, because I know there are a lot. There are a lot of more. There are a lot of from when I was younger. There are just more movies being made. Period. So because of that, there are more original movies being made, but they're smaller budget. They come out later. They're not like these big summer movies that everybody else knows. So I don't want to say Hollywood needs more original ideas, because they have them. But
well, second largest movie of the summer is Secret Life of Pets, and that's
an original one. Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, it's Toy Story with
dogs.
Dogs, but I mean.
So it's,
which I'm sure is the way somebody sold that. So.
Probably. I mean, I never thought of it, but as soon as you said, I'm like, yes, that's exactly what this is. But a lot of movies are like that. They're original, but they're plays on the same kind of ideas on other things. So, all that to say, the studios need to make better choices so they can make better movies.
The calendar needs to be handled better. The quality, your first obligation that you should have when you greenlight a movie is to make a quality movie. Nothing else. Also, like, marketing. Focus on making a good movie. If you can't make a good movie, like, pull the wool over our eyes and fool us into thinking it so that you can get us to in the theater and get our money. Like, Suicide Squad was brilliant with their marketing campaign. Almost like on a Deadpool-like level as far as their marketing campaign goes. But the movie wasn't nearly as good. But you got people in the door, and that's all that matters. You need to focus on getting better marketing. Go look at the Disney marketing machine. Look at how they turn out hits. Look at the things that they do. Now, they have an advantage in that they own multiple platforms. Mm-hmm. They have multiple places to put their ads. But, you know, do better with marketing. Space the calendar out. Hey, just because half the country's under snow in January, February, and March doesn't mean you have to, you know, stay there. And I think we'll get a first taste of that next February, next March, where it's insanely crowded. But start spacing the calendar out. You don't have to put everything in the 12 weeks between the first week of May and the last week of August. You know, you don't have to put that in that time frame for it to make money. You can put a quality genre movie out in September and October, and it's going to draw eyeballs because it's not an awards movie. You know, learn how to use all 12 months of the calendar. And I think that will help. But, like, there's always going to be one or two huge tentpoles that carry the summer, and everything else is just going to be down the line. So manage your expectations, use the calendar well, get better marketing, and you should be fine.
Yeah, we say all this and it sounds easy, but are they going to do it?
No. I mean, summer movie season has been the summer movie season for the last 30 years, and since Hollywood figured out that they could make money on this back when Raiders came out. I mean, you know, they figured it out. Hey, the kids are out of school, parents need something to do, you know, college students have more free time during the summer. I mean, the weather's nice, it's a prime time for people to go to the movies.
It is, but just put better movies there.
Or make better movies. Well, yeah. Focus on the quality of what you're putting out. So, as we prepare to close this podcast, let me remind everyone that there is a Gambit movie being made. Okay. However, it no longer has a director. And Simon Kimborg continues to say that filming will begin in January.
Can we, wait, before we get off, can we just talk about how Fox Marvel lost their director to WB for a movie that we didn't even know was coming out?
Well, we knew it was coming out because Del Toro was attached to it at one point when it was called Justice League Dark.
Okay, here's this thing with Del Toro. Del Toro says he has something coming out every other day. He's kind of like The Rock in that way. And which he says, yeah, I'm working on this, and I'm working on this, and I'm working on this. But how many of those things actually come out? Like, two. So when he says that, I'm like, I believe it when I see it. So he says there's Justice League Dark, and I'm like, oh, that cartoon over there. Yeah, that's right. That's coming out. I don't believe you, Guillermo. And then he, like, officially walks away. And again, I'm like, walked away from what? There was nothing there in the first place. So, to me, that movie did not exist. So when I hear a real person's name, Doug Liman, I'm like, wait, you are actually physical. You're tangible. I can touch you. And you're going to do Justice League Dark? Oh, this movie exists?
Dark Universe.
Which, as we said, there's a slate. It's not on the slate. So they're actually doing it, and they're putting it on the slate. But we didn't know about it. We officially did not know about it. And WB took him. WB, with all of the problems they have going on with their comic book movies, took him from Gambit.
The second director to walk away from Gambit.
Look, Gambit is my favorite X-Men, but this movie
is cursed.
It's not cursed. It just needs not to happen. If you don't understand signs, I think this is like a big sign. What do you need? A neon sign that says, do not make me?
Like, Channing Tatum and Laura Sharon or want to.
As I found out this week, they were, the first time around, they were actually building sets.
In New Orleans.
Yeah. And they just stopped. They told them to stop. Who does that? Who does that expect the movie to actually happen? You don't do that.
That's what happens when Rupert Wyatt walks away from your movie.
Because you didn't have one. Whatever you had, well, they had to be building those sets around the time Deadpool came out. And then Fox was like, whoa, pause. We spent like a dollar and a nickel to make Deadpool, and it made us how much money? And we're building sets right now for this thing that's going to cost almost two? Pause. Everybody come back in. Huddle up. We got to do this over again. And from that point on, that movie died on that half-built lot in New Orleans somewhere. It's done. Let it go.
Indeed. And I think we can also now officially not only call ourselves the podcast of Ego the Living Planet, we can also call ourselves the official podcast of the James and the Giant Peach remake, which this week got a director, potentially, in Sam Mendes. So,
yeah.
We knew it was about time for them to do that, and Disney's remaking all their animated stuff into live action, and hopefully this version of James and the Giant Peach with CG will be a lot less creepy than the stop motion.
I've still never seen a stop motion one.
It will haunt your nightmares.
All right, so I'm not going to show that to my daughter. All right.
All right, so if you want to keep up with this podcast as beleaguered and as spaced out as it is at times, you can follow me at BCW Tiger Fan.
And at The Mitch Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant night.